What's up, guys? Welcome back to Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally. Dave's just going to cough through my intro. This program is it's brought to you by True Nutrition. Our code is ADVICES. You could use that for some additional savings. Guys, if you enjoy our programming, hit the like button, hit the subscribe button, hit the notification bell. That way you can stay up to date with everything that we are doing here. Dave Crossland, we've got a whole bunch of stuff to talk about. It's all drugs and stuff related, everything from news to we had some follow-up questions from the previous episode, and we have some new listener questions. What's going on, man? How you been?
I'm okay. I can't remember what the previous episode was.
Well, we took last week off. So
that
we...
was bad. No, you took last week off.
Yes, technically, yes. I recorded with John Meadows last week, and...
I see. So I get binned for John. Is that how it is now, is it? Right.
It was good. It was a good show. I did it for us. I did it so that we could bring new people in to hear you talk about steroids.
You're so full of shit.
It is kind of true, though. You know, that's the YouTube game. You know, you bring in awesome people to talk with, and everything just builds from there. But anyway, on topic, man. Last time we spoke, you were telling us about how the newspaper had gotten a hold of you and that they wanted to do a story. I found an article here. This is from the Daily Telegraph. This was put out just a few days ago. The title of this article is "Inside Britain's Steroid Problem: How the Quick Fix Bodybuilder Drug Went Mainstream." And they've quoted you in here. They have a picture of you in here when you were like at your most jacked, huge, 400 plus pounds. And what did you?
I actually think that's quite a good line.
Yeah.
The steroids have gone mainstream.
They really have, haven't they? Especially over there where they're legal, kind of legal, quasi legal.
Yeah. You don't really think of it that way, but they have.
Yeah.
They've broken out from this underground, very clique, very secretive almost group of just a few guys to being very commonplace.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's often characterized with bulging veins, tense expressions, and protruding muscles. You don't.
That's a bitch. I didn't say that before anyone starts fucking slagging me down.
You didn't even know existed. These selfies on Instagram, they're talking about Instagram, give the impression of the person pictured is the epitome of health, or so their captions claim. But for some athletes, it's not just meal plans and dumbbells helping them carve their gargantuan physiques. The use of anabolic steroids, also known as juice, also known as roids, is one of the community's worst kept secrets.
Does anyone refer to steroids as juice and roids who is over the age of 12 and under the age of 60?
Yeah, I don't think so, man.
Gear. I think that's probably the most common slang term, isn't it?
I think so. It's funny because the word gear, gear is used in a lot of, like, if you're a musician, you also have a lot of gear, you know? If you're a photographer, you also have a lot of gear. It's funny because when I think of the word gear, it's like equipment that you need to get the job done, you know?
That potentially could be very true, depending on what job you're trying to do,
Yeah. And they do make note here. It says Arnold Schwarzenegger famously admitted to his use of steroids, a drug which mimics the effects of male hormone testosterone and increases muscle mass and performance, when he was a competitive bodybuilder. And although today's bodybuilders are not as open about their use, their experts believe that it is more prevalent than ever. And then they go into talking about how their cycles back then were a lot lower than the cycles now. And
generally,
it's an interesting article. It's an interesting article.
I mean, there's always been extremes in pro ranks. And even back then, there were guys that pushed the envelope, though I can't give you an example off the top of my head.
Yeah.
But I think the biggest thing now is the size of cycles in the amateur ranks has increased quite significantly.
Mm, yeah.
I think that's where we see the biggest increase in doses is in the non-professional. It's more in the amateur ranks than those trying to become.
If you go online and you're looking for information on testosterone or steroids, you're often directed to a site that's quite one-sided. For most people, they are unable to have an accurate and balanced information. I don't see any links to the Drugs and Stuff podcast here anywhere, Dave, first of all. So I'm kind of a little bit offended by this.
I tried. What can I say?
It does mention Dave Crossland, though, and they did do an interview with you. How long did that take? Like, when you talked to the newspaper, because this is not an uncommon thing for you. How long does something...
2 hours.
Are you kidding me? 2 hours?
Two. Maybe a bit longer.
Huh. Mm. Dave says, no one ever just does one cycle.
It's very rare.
The high of walking into the gym and being able to smash a personal best, looking great and feeling confident, it's extremely tempting to want to feel that again, to want to feel like a superhero. Dude, that's where I think, so steroids, you know, it's not addictive the way that like, you know, an illicit drug, whatever, crack would be addictive. But man, that it is something that, you know, you definitely can change your state quickly. You become much more aggressive. Your workouts start to get better. You start to get stronger. And those results, the results of weightlifting are addictive for somebody that has an addictive personality. There's no question about that. And it just helps push those results, right?
There's a few things. Addiction in regards around steroid use is, I suppose, not as clear cut as you would say with someone who's addicted to heroin. You know, they have a very strong physical withdrawal. They have a very strong emotional withdrawal. And they physically get ill without the drugs.
Yeah.
But in saying that, you could argue that the fact that a lot of users have to use testosterone because they no longer have natural hormone production, it has left them drug dependent. So slightly different, granted. But I do know people whose quality of life and whose feeling of self-worth and self-confidence and very other aspects of their personality go literally down the toilet if they're not on cycle.
Oh, no
or
question.
If they're not using.
I've seen that, man.
And people that will really go to great lengths to avoid not using. And where you see this quite dramatically is most users are quite comfortable about going onto a cruise, even a correctly dosed cruise. Most people are quite confident about doing that. But when you start suggesting that they actually come off, a lot of users get very, very, and a very large percentage of users get very uncomfortable when they have to consider not using at all.
Yeah.
Because we become very psychologically linked to the drugs in that we don't progress if we've not got the drugs. We know we don't progress at the same rate.
Sure.
We know we're going to drastically reduce our rate of progression. And it's very difficult for anyone to go backwards.
Absolutely.
Particularly when they're aware of that. You know, none of us like to regress when we're aware. Sometimes, I mean, like my change in physique and the fact that I'm probably more fat than muscle these days hasn't been something that's been particularly conscious or visual to me. Mainly because I've been busy with other things and I wasn't really that bothered anymore. Where have you taken the mindset I had at the end of, say, UC1?
Yeah.
Regression of my physique at that point would have been very traumatic. It would have been very difficult to cope with and to accept and to deal with.
You're in a completely different place then. That was your main focus, is I think what it came down to. Now you have business that you're focused on, and being successful at that is really where it, like, stopping gear at that point would be similar to me telling you, like, Dave, you can't travel and do talks anymore. You know what I mean? It's like, well, what then, you know? Or you can't use the internet anymore, you know?
And I think the other thing is as well is when you start to invest money and time sacrifice,
yeah,
to achieve your goals, those goals become much more important to you.
Absolutely.
If you trained 2-3 times a week and you sort of went when you could, but you weren't that bothered if you missed, it's not such a big deal. But when you spend 5 days, 6 days a week, and really when you look at it over the course of years, thousands and thousands of pounds or dollars on drugs and diet and this and that and the other, then it becomes a huge investment, both emotionally, financially, and time-wise.
Absolutely.
And no one likes to waste their money. No one likes to waste their efforts. No one likes to buy something, which is effectively, in a way, what you're doing. You're buying it with your time.
Right.
You're buying it with, you know, your effort. You're buying it with money as well, with supplements and drugs and everything else. And no one likes to do that and then come to the end of it and have nothing to show for it.
No, absolutely.
So it wouldn't be like, here, Scott, here's a Lamborghini. You can have this car.
Right.
And then 6 months later, oh, sorry, Scott, I'm taking the Lamborghini back.
Ooh.
Here's a Gremlin. You can run an AMC Gremlin now for the rest of your time.
Do they even make Gremlins anymore?
No, but that's going to hurt.
That would, but I would still like the Gremlin, but I get the analogy.
You know what I mean? That's going to hurt, isn't it? Because you're going to sit in that and think, last week I was driving in a hurricane, you know, whatever. And that's how you're going to look at it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it's very similar with physiques, you know, particularly when it comes to performance in the gym.
Yeah.
And then you start sounding like me, that sad old man that says, oh, I used to.
I used to weigh 415 pounds. Sure you did, old man. Sure you did.
Piss off, you silly old git.
I thought that was interesting, though. It was cool to see you mentioned in the newspaper. I know it's not as big of a deal to you. I wanted to pull up a couple questions we had, follow-up questions from the previous episode. Oh, speaking of you in the media, what's the news on your film?
Oh, it's released, hang on, February. Oh, God. It's released on February the 1st.
This is The Man with the Hammer? Is that what it's called?
Yep. Okay. On YouTube.
Ooh, okay.
And Vimeo. It's free. It's only about 10, 12 minutes long.
Oh, cool.
I think it's about 9 o'clock at night they release it.
Oh, sweet. So it's going to be free, so everybody can check that out. And this is a short German film. This is a short German film, and it's like a psychological type thing. Dave plays the scary man in a cave with a great big hammer, and you have these crazy looking black contacts in your eyes that's terrifying. It is terrifying.
I basically portray your self-doubt, and you questioning yourself and questioning your ability and battling against fatigue and all that lot. And that's me.
It's the story of a guy. He's a runner, right? So he's running, and as he's running, he's picturing, you know, this. He's picked. It's his inner thoughts. I'm excited, man.
It's his inner battle with does he give up or does he carry on?
Yeah.
And so I represent, you know, his doubts and his fears and the physical pain of the endurance of what he's doing. And the hammer blows are the physical pain, so the lactic acid buildup, the cramps, stuff like that. But also that, which I'm sure, particularly in comp prep, many people have done when they're up in the early hours of the morning, walking the streets, freezing the bollocks off, doing cardio.
Yeah, yeah.
Why the fuck am I doing this? So all that sort of stuff comes into it. It's born out of the Germans have a saying about you hitting the wall.
Yeah.
So you hear runners and endurance athletes talk about hitting the wall. And the Germans describe that as meeting the man with a hammer.
Mm.
So that's effectively what it is. It's at the Snowtown Film Festival in downtown Watertown, New York.
Ooh.
This week as well.
Okay. We should have we'll have like a watch party or something when that comes out. We'll all watch it together when it hits YouTube, and I'll have links and everything over at the Advices page. Speaking of which, guys, if you guys have any questions, if you want to take part in any of our programming, head on over to the Advices Facebook group. So we have the Advices page, which is, you know, where we post all the new episodes that come out, so you can stay up to date with what we're releasing. Comment there, like that stuff if you want, and then we have the group. And the group is where we talk. So you could post anything you want up there. It so far I found it's been a really good group, a lot of nice people. Everybody's got a really good attitude after I kicked Dave out. That is, now that Dave's not there, the group's been just going smashingly. I've really enjoyed the company of those people without Dave.
I'm shit. What can I say?
Dave's allowed to.
But he's barred me. Honestly, he has. He's blocked me. That's why he can't tag me anymore. I mean, he's acting like he hasn't when he has.
I did, guys. No, I didn't. All right. So I'm over at the YouTube page because we had another follow up. So let's see. Home Growing Health. He says faster clearance would also mean more of the compound absorption in less time, like a propionate ester, for instance. Does that make sense, Dave?
No. A shorter time clearance would not mean that you would absorb more.
No?
Because you don't... Your release rate of the hormone is obviously the release rate of the hormone from the ester. Once the hormone's ester-free, its half-life is a matter of hours. But you don't really absorb. It enters the bloodstream, okay, floats around as free hormone.
Oh.
Attaches to a receptor, and certain drugs will attach to lots of different receptors. So like tren can attach to progesterone receptors, estrogen receptors, certain other receptors that are non-androgenic in the body as well. But it'll attach to a receptor. Now, because steroids aren't selective, so that could be in the prostate, it could be in the brain, it could be in muscle tissue, it could be in other areas of the body. So they attach to the receptor, they dump their signal, and then they release from the receptor and float off again. And they do that until they die.
Mm.
But they can also be bound by albumin. They can also be bound by SHBG when they're floating in the bloodstream. They can also be caught by 5-alpha reductase and converted to DHT. They can also be caught by aromatase and converted to estrogen. So this is all happening all the time. So if you use the faster ester or you have a faster clearance rate, all that means is that more of the hormone you inject is available quicker.
Hmm.
It doesn't change the rate at which your body would use it.
Okay, gotcha.
So, you know, it would, and if you reach saturation point with your receptors, then your body will start to produce more because your receptors die after a matter of hours as well. So they're constantly being renewed.
Yeah.
What people don't realize is there's actually androgen receptors in fat.
Mm. And that's going to lead me to my next question. So he says another guy, and I'm not even sure where this one's at, but he said it had to do with fat. I saw it was on here somewhere. Oh, come on. Somebody had a question because we had talked about body fat changing the way that a steroid would work. So I can't find the question offhand, but can you speak to that? Why would your level of body fat change the way a steroid would work? And then after that, we'll get to the rest of our questions that were posted in the group.
The higher body fat, generally speaking, the quicker you will metabolize the drug. I'm not sure why that is, but that is the case. But also body fat have androgen receptors. So part of your free hormone will be bound to receptors in body fat.
Okay.
The other thing is the fatter you are, the higher you'll have a level of aromatase.
Hmm.
So more of your hormone would be aromatized to estrogen as well.
I see. So there'd be more conversion, potentially.
Yes. So technically, the more body fat you carry, the less of the drug that you take is available to bind with androgen receptors in muscle tissue.
Mm.
Because it's either bound in fat cells or it's bound to aromatase and convert to estrogen.
Interesting. Huh. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And I imagine that'll answer this guy's question. So, Dave, I haven't – we're about to go to break, but I wanted to tell you, I haven't used any gear, any cycle type of protocol for about 2 years now, since my last show in 2017. I just had some therapeutic phlebotomy done. My levels, I was running kind of like what I'll call an aggressive TRT. Like I was a little bit above, a couple hundred points above normal on my test levels, and I liked it all right. But I did bring it down, and it's been down for a few months. But my hematocrit was still up there, so I removed some blood. I'm thinking I might do a little something here coming up, Dave.
Yeah,
I think I might go back to the dark side.
How did you feel the next day after you had the blood removed?
I felt like I could focus better.
Did you? I noticed that quite dramatically. Did
you?
Well.
Really? No kidding. Yeah. I've been looking for information just to back that up. I haven't found anything, but I felt like I could focus better. As of that evening, I felt like I could focus better.
And I found focus, concentration was better. I found energy levels were higher. I felt fresher. Hmm. I felt less fatigued. I felt less... I felt bogged down. And it does seem very... Well, it is direct. I mean, I know it's direct, but the fact that the higher your blood is, in general, the more sluggish and heavier and just sort of slough-like you're going to feel. Your energy levels are going to be slumpy.
Yeah.
And you're just not going to feel bright and fresh. And it's definitely something that I think a lot of us don't really consider. But it is a really good... If you start to feel fatigue or that sort of drowsiness and things coming to a halt, it's always worth checking your bloods and seeing if where they are.
Absolutely. So I was at, like, I think 51, 52 on hematocrit. And so it wasn't, like, super crazy out of range, but it wasn't great. And it had been there long term. Another thing I could feel is... I could feel just less pressure in my body. Like I don't, you know, there'd be times that if I was tying my shoes, maybe I'd feel my heartbeat a little bit more in my face type thing. And I don't feel that now. Definitely less winded, a little bit less winded. The other thing I noticed was the next day I went. So that day, I did that at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. That morning before I went and did it, I had a great chest workout or a great push workout. Freaking amazing pump. Next day, nutrition was exactly the same. Had plenty of fluids after I had donated, or not donated, but had about 400 milliliters removed of blood. I felt like I was a pint short in the gym. I got zero pump. Like I got no pump at all, man. Nothing I could do to save my life with that.
It's now, get these numbers right. I believe it's 4 weeks to get... From a normal person, so you donated a pint of blood that would have obviously at that point reduced your levels. So right. At that point. So this is for normal level. I believe it's 4 weeks to get plasma back up to full level and 8 weeks in total for red blood cell count and hematocrit to recover.
Okay.
Obviously, in a user, it's a slightly different scenario because we're already above limit and we're trying to come back down.
Ah.
So have you tested since to see...
I
what
have
levels
not.
Are at now.
I have not, but I am scheduled to go back every 30 days now with this hematologist. So I'll find out in a month from the last draw to see exactly where I'm at, and if I say we're to hop on a little bit of Devo and EQ and levels were to go up again, I'm about to donate again. So there is that to my advantage. So I'm throwing that idea around though. We'll see how it goes. Oh, one more question before we go to break. Deca Beats, he says, whose dog is snoring on the last episode? He must not have watched our previous episodes when I already bitched Dave out. And Dave told me that he had that dog put to sleep for us, for the show. And it didn't happen. It must not have happened.
How do you know it's not me or the wife snoring? Maybe the wife's asleep on the sofa.
It was Mrs. Cross. I'm telling her you said that.
Come here. What?
He doesn't even want to come up now.
Come on. He's sat between my legs here.
Guys, he's like an 80-pound English bulldog.
Good boy. Right, come on.
His head is bigger than Dave's head. Oh, my God.
Jesus Christ, no. Back it up.
We should do the whole show with him on your... Oh, my God, he's adorable.
That's Scott. Scott's me to you. Scott, what did you put down? Give him stink eye. Go on. Look at him. Give him a stink eye. Look at him.
All right, guys. We'll be back in just a minute.
Hey, guys. Why are you using sports nutrition that was designed for someone else? At TrueNutrition.com, they offer the world's largest selection of quality protein powders, and they let you design your own custom blend from a variety of powders, flavors, boosts, and packaging options, like the Team Skip blend, for instance. That's over 20 billion possible combinations to create a protein powder tailored to your diet, your goals, your tastes, and your budget. TrueNutrition.com also offers the ability to create delicious custom oatmeal blends. And they're third-party tested, proving that all their supplements are ensured to have the highest level of quality and value. Don't be a sucker and pay for fancy packaging and gimmicks. Discover the source that bodybuilders trust and stop using mass-produced nutrition that wasn't designed for you. TrueNutrition.com. And use our code ADVICES at checkout to let them know that you support the shows.
All right, guys, welcome back to Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. And we've got some questions here. I'm going to go to one that's anonymous first. So let's see here. He just doesn't want to be part of the – he doesn't want to post this publicly. He says, could you please ask Dave to discuss some of the benefits of using strictly bioidentical compounds such as test, GH, and insulin to moderate dosages compared to using non-bioidentical compounds such as nandrolone, EQ, Trent, etc. at moderate doses. I've heard of some other people briefly touch on this subject and am interested as to what Dave has to say, especially in regards to brain health. I know that benefits may be the wrong word to use, but by benefits, I mainly mean how using bioidentical hormones may be less bad for you than non-bioidentical. First of all, I want to say Dave and I looked at this question right before we started the show. So in medication, there is something that is called bioidentical hormones. You can get bioidentical estrogen, bioidentical testosterone. There's a lot of bioidentical hormones, and these are hormones that are made in a way that are basically identical to the hormones that are in your bodies. It's not like it's different than just like basically your synthetic testosterone. I'm not the guy to ask about the specific details, but what we have decided is he is not talking about that. What he's talking about is simply using hormones and drugs that your body already does normally produce versus using, say, you know, tranexamic, which your body doesn't produce tren. So Dave kind of deducted that himself as we were talking about this before we started. But Dave, what's your thoughts here, man? Using things that your body would normally produce anyway at a higher level versus introducing zany stuff like tren.
I think the issue here is that the range is very small. So for argument's sake, normally for most people, 100, 125 milligram of testosterone entrenate a week is an athlete, should I say. It is going to sort of get you pretty close to normal levels. You're going to be there or thereabouts on range. Obviously, as soon as you start going up from that, there is a short, almost increase in positivity, but that soon drops off as sides start to ramp up very, very quickly. So, you know, you go up to 250 mg a week, and you're probably going to feel some benefits and you're probably going to feel a little bit better, but it won't take long for the buildup of stuff like RBC, hematocrit, stuff like that to start to come up and start creating negative issues as well. So there, personally, I don't see much benefit. I understand that, yes, there is something to be said for having a test base, even at a low dose, just for the fact that we do work primarily on testosterone and DHT and estrogen. So having that baseline level of drug in there is an advantage over, say, just running Masteron or something that isn't going to convert in the same way. Because if you did a cycle of just Masteron, you'd end up with very low estrogen levels. Because it's not going to convert, you're going to be shut down, and it's slightly estrogenic, anti-estrogenic, should I say. So you're going to end up with low estrogen levels, and that's going to cause problems. So there is something in that. But I mean, you start going over 2-4 IU of growth every day, every other day, and you're going to start to experience water retention problems. You're going to start to experience joint carpal tunnel type syndrome effects. You're going to significantly reduce your insulin sensitivity.
Sure.
So the scope of dose with these drugs isn't massive. So unless you're looking at generally sort of well-being levels of a couple of IU every other day of that, maybe a very low dose of insulin with meals just to give the beta cells a little bit of support. Again, we're talking a couple of IU. We're not talking anything that's going to have any significant impact on muscle growth.
How about on the brain? That was one place that he was really interested in focusing. I know you've talked before about DECA and brain health, some stuff I had not heard before.
Yeah, I mean, nandrolones, if you look at the studies, and bearing in mind that these studies are, to the most part, not always translatable 100%. So when we look at DECA, it's 11 times more damaging to blood cell construction than testosterone is. And it's particularly more damaging to heart cells. In real terms, what effect 600 milligrams of DECA has as against 600 milligrams of testosterone? I don't know, because it's never been looked at. So I really couldn't say. When you look at the anabolic to androgenic ratios, DECA makes more sense because it's less androgenic, so it's less stressful, and it's a higher anabolic, so it's got a greater effect. So anabolically rating wise, DECA at 400 is going to be very similar to test at 600.
Okay.
But androgenically wise, the test is double. Because you've got 600 on your androgenic ratio there, where you've got, well, 200 on your DECA ratio at that. So in that point, DECA ticks a lot of positive boxes. It's anti-inflammatory. It increases collagen synthesis, so it supports joints. There's so many little boxes that DECA sticks. But then when we get into brain chemistry, we start to see that DECA has some negative impacts. So it binds with transport proteins for dopamine and serotonin. So we're going to see reduction in those levels. Has an impact on neuropeptide Y, which reduces our ability to form memories. So it's far more complex than to say, well, you better stick into compounds that mimic hormones that naturally occur in the body. Because as soon as you get into super pharmacological doses, that sort of all goes out the window.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You know, if you run tests, you don't manage estrogen, then you're going to have estrogen side related issues. So once you start upping the doses, the rules just change. But in theory, if you were talking at TRT type levels and just trying to maintain optimized general well-being, then yeah, sticking to test growth and insulin would probably be the ones you'd be looking at. And unless you've got an issue with your insulin sensitivity, I would have said that insulin is probably very unnecessary, or you're extremely heavy on your simple carbs and your general carb intake, then I'd also say that insulin would be completely unnecessary at those sort of levels. But yeah, you could optimize things to a degree with low-dose test and very low-dose growth hormone. Not in the same way as you would with, say, low dose. Oh, shut up. They're ringing me about my motor room because it's in the garage. They would, you know, you'd have negative impacts probably much quicker.
Yeah.
If you were running non naturally occurring compounds in your body. And I know there's a lot of argument about DECA. And DECA only cycles, and you know, Robbie Robinson ran DECA only cycles supposedly, and there's a few people that really push these. When you look at the science, when DECA's been considered as a TRT drug, in every study I've ever seen, it comes with a caveat that erectile dysfunction is a potential big problem.
Sure, sure.
Doesn't affect everybody, but the thing is, DECA doesn't convert to DHT. It converts to DHN, which is a weaker version. So obviously you're going to be suppressed. You're not going to be producing testosterone, so you're not going to be getting DHT. And when DHN supplants that, it is weaker in its signal. So as a result, you can have erectile dysfunction. Mm-hmm. So if you were talking optimizing performance before going super pharmacological, then test, growth, yeah, great. And there's a huge amount of research and looking at growth as effectively a youth serum and about keeping us healthier for younger. But as soon as you go super pharmacological, those rules go out the window. And then you've got to look at the drugs in a different way, and you've got to manage the side effects.
Yeah.
And it's very much of, if I take this drug at this dose, what's its impact? If I take this drug at this dose, what's its impact? And to me, what risk to reward ratio is the most beneficial for me?
I recently mentioned this on another podcast that, you know, early on in my cycling, I thought to myself, okay, so if I'm using, we'll say, you know, 500 test and 400 DECA, you know, it's about a gram total. I thought to myself, well, what if I just use on only test and I just use a gram of that? I'll tell you what, the experience I had was not nearly as good running more test and leaving the other compound out. Because once you start getting higher, as you're saying, Dave, it's that dosage. I started experiencing a lot more side effects having used a lot more of one than having used less of two. So, And of course, it's, you know, it all depends on the compounds that you're using, you know, that's going to be a factor. But definitely, I can attest to that more test was definitely not necessarily beneficial. I got a weird one here. I'll be curious to know if you know anything about this compound, Dave. A compound not discussed a lot, MHN, and that is methyl hydroxynandrolone. Where do you and Dave think it's best used, off season or prep? I've read about people using it to replace VAR the last 3 to 4 weeks of their contest prep. I've used this before, actually.
I haven't. I've never even seen it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
so it's a methylated version of nandrolone, effectively.
Yeah, it's an oral tablet.
Yeah.
I would, believe it or not, I would compare it to something like a Winstrol. Like, I got a harder look out of it. I got a harder, drier look out of it. And I didn't get the joint issues that I had gotten out of using Winstrol.
I'm going to have to pass.
Okay, fair enough.
It's the reason I'm saying this is because it's not a drug I'm familiar with. And I need to have a look at it. And obviously, when you start methylating drugs, you can really change how the pharmacology, you know what I'm trying to say, bollocks to you.
Yeah.
of that compound. So, you know, normally we look at nandrolone and thinking pre-show, and I'm thinking, well, it acts as a progesterone. There shouldn't be water issues, but there may be some progesterone-related problems arising. Obviously, Winstrol is anti-progestinic, which is why it gives you that super hard, dry look.
Yeah.
Because it lowers progesterone levels quite significantly in the body. But this being methylated could completely change the actions that nandrolone does. So, and I don't know. It's not a drug I've ever looked at. So it's not a drug I've ever had a need to look at. So I will have a look at that, but I'd be interested to hear your experiences because you've used it and that counts for a hell of a lot.
Yeah, it was a limited experience. I was posting regularly at a message board, and a source came out with some exotic stuff, including so this is like 2006, maybe somewhere in there. A source had ment, trestolone acetate, one test cipinate, and
which would have been rare back then. Oh, it would have been very rare back then.
Unbelievably rare, you know. And they had one test sip DHB, which was really stable, mm-hmm. and no pain. Like they really knew what they're doing with this. And they had the MHN. They asked for people who wanted to try this stuff and talk about it on the board. And because I was a regular poster, they sent me out, a bunch of their stuff, and I used it. I tried it out. I had enough MHN to run for, I think I'm going to say like 4 weeks, and I can't even remember how I dosed it. But yeah, that was the main thing I noticed at that time, was that I got a harder, drier look. I remember the source was advertising saying that it would also help to produce energy. I don't know where that comes from. But
I'll have a look, but it's I would, off the top of my head, I would suspect that it's going to be very similar to Halo.
Hmm. Okay.
But I will have a look.
So, I mean, long story short, I think a lot of times, and this is just speaking in a general way now, but a lot of times I think that, you know, we think that there's going to be something new that's going to be different and better, be it through a new SARM or a pro hormone or a peptide or this rare exotic compound that we haven't used before. But in reality, it's the bread and butter, you know, that's going to get you there. I don't think that we, you know, a lot of people, we don't have experiences with this stuff. I'd go with things where we know what the side effects generally are and stick with that, you know, because you could find stuff that works that's not exotic. So that would just be my advice, you know, versus experimenting with something that, like, you're not going to find something better. Do you know what I mean, Dave?
Mm. No, I mean, most steroids were invented 40, 50 years ago.
Right.
There's not been a huge amount of development in steroids, really. You know, what labs have done is take compounds and blend them and bring back very old compounds that were researched, developed, but never used because they found no pharmaceutical use for them.
Right.
So there are a lot of drugs out there that have been forgotten about that still float around, and it only just takes someone to decide, you know what, I'm going to play with this. And it hits the market. And generally speaking, everyone goes mad for it for 12 months or so, and then it just starts to dissipate, slow down. And you'll get a few people that want to keep up with it, but it'll, like men. Men was super popular 18 months, 2 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Crazy popular.
Now you don't see it that much.
Yeah.
Because it's not the easiest of compounds to live with.
Yeah.
And though it is effective and it's a good strength drug and it's powerful stuff, people get sick of having to try and deal with the side effects. And they just drop back to the old traditionals that they know they can run continuously without too much effort and without too much thought.
Yeah.
The exception is probably Trend. Trend's one that's hit, stayed, and even though it has a list of side effects as long as our arms and some quite significant ones, it is the one that does seem to have managed to weather the storm post. But yeah, DHB, again, that sort of peaked last year and is sort of waning away a bit now. People aren't as hot on it as they used to be. And it'll be interesting, yeah, but I will have a look. I mean, I've just thrown it up now on Google, just a bit of the history of it, and it was originally developed by a pharmaceutical country at 5 milligram tablets.
Okay.
But I'll have a look into the pharmacology of it and get a bit more on what it actually does and how it works.
Okay, cool. I'll look forward to hearing that. I'll be interested to hear your input on this one. T3 versus T4. This is a question from a guy named Sean over at the group. Speaking to a few UK pros, they seem to primarily use T4 over T3, yet US pro cycles tend to be the opposite. Pros and cons of using one over the other. Thanks, mate.
Was that your attempt to be English at the end?
He said mate. So I'm
oh,
just,
he said mate.
I'm just, right. I'm just reading what he said, mate. Cheers.
Availability of T3 as a pharmaceutical product.
Cheers,
is
cheers, Sean.
What can I throw at you?
Cheers, Dave.
I'll throw a dog at you. T3 is not readily available as a pharmaceutical product in the UK. T4 is. If you have thyroid issues in the UK, you're going to be prescribed T4. Saying that, T3 is not difficult to get hold of either on the black market. I mean, it's readily available. It's very much a staple. You know, most sellers will carry T3 in the same way as they would carry Test and Clen and all the usual stuff. Now, the issue is that your body converts T4 to T3. And steroids can actually disrupt this conversion.
Tren in particular, right, can have an effect on this.
Tren, well, nandrolones in general. So Tren, Deca, both have an impact on this.
Okay.
So the problem is then that if you're using T4 as a cutting agent, if it's not converting at its correct proportions to T3, you'll end up with an excess of T4. The side effect of that is depression.
Mm.
And you get your T4, T3 balance out, and it can floor you really bad, really, really badly. Now, people tend to expect this in comp prep to some degree, so I would say that the milder symptoms that it can when it starts can sometimes not be recognized, because you're 4 weeks out from a show, you're feeling like arse anyway, you're on the floor as it is, so you just assume it's because of where you are in prep.
Right.
Now, obviously T3 is far more potent than T4, and if you wanted to put a number on it, roughly four times. Elevated T3 levels over T4 don't have the same impact. So if you've got high T4 and low T3, that impact is quite significant. But if you've got low T4 and high T3, that isn't. Because the feedback mechanism within thyroid production monitors T4 levels and T3 levels. And if T3 levels are high, then TSH will drop. Thyroid stimulating hormone will be reduced and less T4 will be produced. So the body's used to the imbalances in high T3 and T4. It's part of the regulation of the hormone. Whereas what we don't see naturally is a high T4 and a low T3.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there is a thyroid condition called Hashimoto's, which is quite common. And that is where the conversion of T4 to T3 is not very good. My wife suffers from it. So she has to medicate T4 and T3 to maintain a balance. So there is no advantage over it. I don't understand why someone would be using T4 over T3. It is definitely a more difficult way to take a thyroid drug. T3 is much simpler because you don't really have that much management in that case, because you don't get really adverse effects from it. But if you were to run T4 and T3, you would generally run it at a ratio of 4 to 1. So 100 T4, 25 T3.
Yeah, they make some pills that are like that. I've used that type of thing when I had dieted. I preferred a combo like that, and trying to keep the dose as low as possible too.
They make it as a medicinal product for the American market as well, I believe.
Yes. Yeah, I've had some stuff that was made overseas for other countries as well that was, you know, I can't remember what the dosages were, but I want to say 50 T4 to like 12.5, you know, T3, something
like
that.
Sounds about right, yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen it as a legit pharmaceutical product. Unfortunately, the UK, when it comes to thyroid management and thyroid medications and in thyroid problems, it's shit.
Mm.
It's not very well recognized, and you get much better support from the sort of thyroid association and the private organizations that help people with thyroid problems than you do from the National Health Service. It seems to be an issue that they're very, very backward on.
Oh, it's a shame.
They don't recognize a lot of the side effects and problems that come with a dysfunctional thyroid, including stuff like depression and low mood and low energy and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah. All right. We've got a couple more here. Pulsing orals, like 2 days of Anadrol, 2 days of VAR, or 2 weeks of Anadrol. 2 weeks of VAR. Any real benefits of this, or is it just better to go with 4 weeks of Anadrol, period?
Why? I mean, all right, you're changing the compounds. You're still going to have liver stress because it's a methylated product, so it's still going to, you know, it's still going to affect the liver and stress the liver. You're still going to possibly have stomach stress because it is a bit harsh on the stomach lining. But there's no real benefit to running different orals at different times. And I think real world, you're not going to see a major impact, particularly on something like a 2-2 day or a 2-week, 2-week.
Yeah. I've heard of people doing it, though. And I mean, I don't think it's just like with MHN or something, you know, like when I was saying that there's no like magic secret with a new compound, I don't think that's like, it's not, you're not going to unlock something that we haven't already figured out by, you know, it's not, the secret isn't in this weird dosing protocol.
No, not at all. The one thing I've never understand is front loads with orals.
Because they're there instantly.
Yeah, but I've never understood why would you front load with an oral? So you'll take most stressful ways to administer the compound, the hormone, orally. You do it at the very beginning of your... So you're having a mega dose of drugs in the first... 4 weeks, 6 weeks, your body's not going to have a positive response to that. Your liver's going to get stressed. The body's going to get blocked. As a result, your stomach's digestion is going to suffer. And then you're expecting to run the rest of your cycle.
That's a good point.
Why toxify yourself in the first 6 weeks and do a hormones? Wouldn't it make more sense to do a normal start, let it build up, get into the swing of everything, and then add the orals towards the back end when you know when you come off you're going to be clear completely, or at least on a TRT where you can recover. It doesn't matter as much if you're at the end because you're going to drop the dose, so it's going to be able to recover very quickly. And you've gone through your mass stage. You've gone through that real heavy, crucial eating stage when you want to maximize your good health. And it gives you a nice kick at the 6 to 8 week region if you're doing a 12-week cycle, where normally we start to lag and in place with our cycles and our training because we've been hammering it for the last 6 weeks.
We're starting to lose our
psychological.
We're starting to lose our signal, I think. Every couple minutes, it keeps breaking up. But I still caught with what you're saying. I think you make a good point, Dave, that. Yeah, why not add that oral in later when you could actually probably benefit from it, right? You're going to start benefiting from the injectable the day you take it, and things are just going to be on an upward trajectory from there. Toward the end of the cycle, eventually things are going to kind of peter off. You're not going to be making as much progress, and if you're in a place then to up your game, you know, add that oral in then. That makes sense to me.
And why would you... toxic part of your cycle where because you're continuing on a cycle after, he's not going to be able to recover.
Yeah.
So you make yourself toxic and leave yourself stressed and toxic.
Absolutely.
Where if you put it at the end, you know when you finish it, you've got downtime from the drugs anyway. So he's going to be able to recover much more. So you end up with a full cycle length of increased oxygen when you could actually have it only for the back end of the last 4 to 6 weeks.
I like that idea. All right, let's wrap up here. We actually had a bunch more questions that came in while we were recording, so we could do a whole another show with that, which I think we shall. We'll save the rest of these questions for the next episode. So if you guys didn't hear your question, feel free to listen to the next one. It'll be there. Feel free to ask questions too in the meantime, either over at that thread that we posted at the group, or guys, you can comment right in the YouTube page here if you guys are watching the video. Well, guys, for Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland, reach on out, crosslands.org.uk. And, of course, please check out our sponsor, truenutrition.com. Thanks, guys, for watching. And if you enjoy the programming, then please hit the subscribe button, hit the notification bell, leave us a like, leave us a comment. We'll see you guys soon.
Bye.